this day in 1978, the Jerry Rafferty LP City to City made itself known to the world. Released 46 years ago today, is there a better sax rock solo? No, there's not. It's about a man who dreams of owning a house and living away from his neighbourhood, but he's a drunk and cannot achieve that goal. He drinks to forget what he doesn't have and never realises he's a rolling stone with no direction. But I didn't know any of that because I just waited for the sax solo. It's by a guy called Raphael Ravenscroft, and he was paid £27 for that sax solo, and the check bounced. So he had it framed. So there you go, Baker Street, what a song. Released this day in 1978. All right, time for I've Been Thinking. By the way, the panel poll, probably the biggest response ever on the panel. Sam is wading through pages upon pages upon pages upon pages of texts. The simple question was this. Do you support the legalisation of all drugs in New Zealand because it's International Harm Reduction Day? Both our panellists have said no. What do you say? 2101. They close off in about 2 minutes' time. You'll hear the answers in a few minutes. All right, Sarah, take it away.
So I've been thinking during this glorious autumnal tourist season about the power of our public gardens and the people power protecting them. I was inspired after walking through Albert Park in Auckland on the way to the library and had a kōrero recently with one of the gardeners, and he does an amazing job, rain, hail or shine. So thank you, Mayor Brown, for not slashing the gardener's budget. The fruits of their efforts are all on beautiful display there, and the same with the winter gardens actually in the Domain. The chrysanthemum display undercover is just divine. There's 700 in the collection apparently. So the value of our public gardens on citizens from a well-being perspective is priceless, which brings me to my last point. The value of people power protecting our parks is also priceless, and I'm not just talking about our hard-working green-thumbed council gardeners. So a few days ago, I was invited by the local Parnell community here in Auckland of park protectors, together with Dame Nada Glavish, mana whenua, local board member came for karakia under Taha. Taha is an ancient pohutukaua tree planted at the time of the signing of Te Tiriti o Waitangi, adjacent to the Dove Meyer Robinson Park. Actually, his daughter, Heather Levac, came too. So the gathering was really special. It was to mark the one-year anniversary of the reprieve of the tree due to the government doing a 180-degree back down, choosing not to build the National Erebus Memorial on the site due to the ground instability resulting from Cyclone Gabriel. Now, understand the memorial will have a new home yet to be announced, which is really important for the whānau. Yet for that tūpuna rākau, the ancient pohutukaua, the dominion of Mother Nature, thankfully interceded to bolster the courageous community that actually went up against City Hall for 2 years. Now the root system's no longer at risk from a concrete structure, reminding us all, when we work together in unison for the right reasons, the power of the people with a little divine intervention can achieve miracles.
All right, kia ora, Sarah. Gary Moore, I've been thinking.
In the weekend, I had three TIAs, which are minor strokes. I then experienced the best of our health system. From the 24-hour clinic, St John Ambulance, public hospital, it was seamless and impressively supportive. It was a warning to me on many fronts. So I now still have my thick hide, which you'll know all about, Wallace. And I now have thinner blood, thanks to the pills the doctors have given me. And in The Listener this week, there's a poem by Vincent O'Sullivan which fits, and I'll read it now. If you're not aware of death to some degree, then you're pretending to be other than you are. Every story ends with it, if it is told long enough. But the story, for all that, needs not to be obsessed with. Just don't make it out that it's not there. And it reminded me that our body is on loan to us, and we have to honour it.
Kia ora both. Fantastic. Can I just ask you, Gary, by the way, it's wonderful that you're here on the panel after three minor strokes Friday and Saturday. Can I ask you, how are you?
I'm fine. And I was lying in hospital thinking, damn it, I'll miss the panel.
That's the way, Gary. Oh. You see, that's the spirit. That's what you, that's what kept you through.
Yeah.
You said, I've got
to. Thank you.
I've
thank
got,
you, Wallace.
I've really got to help. Make the panel because we're talking about legalising drugs and I've got something to say. Gary. <yeah. laughs> Gary, can I, how did, for the listeners, how did you talk about, how did you know you were having a stroke?
I had something happen in the backyard on Friday, and I thought it was just uneven surface and all that. I didn't think anything of it. And then on Saturday morning, I was trying to use my mouse with my left hand, which is what I use, and it didn't work as well. So I told Pam about it, and she said, keep an eye on it. And anyway, later in the morning, we were at our daughter and son-in-law's place, and I just keeled over against the wall and said, Pam, it's happening again. And so our daughter sort of said, oh, God, I'll call an ambulance. And I said, no, no, no. And I learnt this from my father. When all else is really bad, you have a cup of tea. So we had a cup of tea, and then Pam took me to 24-hour clinic, and they went, whoom, and I was through.
Wow.
And look, honestly, the testing by everybody was so impressive, and I just want to thank the health system.
Overwhelming. When it's good,
it's terrific.
When it's good and you need to be seen, it can very often be extraordinary, can't it? Yeah, very good, Gary and Sarah. Now, to this, a recent Consumer NZ survey asked around 8,000 Kiwi car owners about their motoring preferences, and the results have been quite surprising. For one, cars that were thought to be popular, like your Mazda 6s or your Hyundai Santa Fe's, scored poorly for owner satisfaction. Meanwhile, guess what you loved? The humble Nissan Leaf. In fact, EV and our hybrid car owners seem to be the heaviest amongst us. But despite,
you're talking to one.
Okay. Well, despite this, only 13% of people currently driving gas guzzlers said they would look to buy an EV in the future. We have to unpick this a bit. So to break it down, leading the charge, chairperson Catherine Trounson. Kia ora, Catherine.
Good evening.
I was quite surprised because in Nissan Leaf, the most satisfied customer, really, don't they only go about 40Ks?
Oh, Wallace, please. What you will actually find is that Nissan Leaf drivers are the true pioneers and the early adopters of electric cars in New Zealand. And you know, some people I know have been driving Leafs since 2012. Okay,
wow.
So I think yes, certainly, if you're down to 30% and 40% state of health, you may only be doing 40 or 50 kilometres. But when the average driver drives 30 kilometres a day, then people like university students and kids at school, you know, a Leaf with that kind of range, which may only have cost them now $7,000, would be absolutely perfect.
Oh, okay.
But, the bit I liked, Wallace, was when it said that basically Tesla drivers, Nissan Leaf drivers, BYD drivers were the EV drivers who were rated their satisfaction the highest.
Yeah, it was quite for that reason. It was quite an extraordinary poll, actually. Anyway, straight to Gary.
Well, we've got a plug-in Toyota Prius, and it's currently doing 94.2 or 94.3 kilometres per litre of fuel, and that's cheap motoring. But in fact, I think it's I'm a petrol head. I shifted to Christchurch because the Vintage Car Club was founded here. So I'm my father was a motor mechanic for 55 years, so I'm deeply embedded in cars. But I just think that I find a combination now of the plug-in Prius, a bus and a bike is the way I get around. And
right.
I think we need to face that as a country. And I must say, I'm really enjoying buses. It's full of quirky people and they keep me fully entertained.
Yeah, here's what. I leave my lumbering SUVs in the dust And no, I leave lumbering SUVs in the dust in my 9-year-old Nissan Leaf. They're so fast. They're so zippy. Another one here. We've had our Nissan Leaf for 12 years. Happy as. Smug because it hasn't cost anything. Hasn't cost us anything to maintain. We've replaced one 12-volt battery. That's it. Except, of course, the normal tyres. They are so much cheaper to run. No servicing fees. Catherine. Yeah.
That, well, and that's exactly of all the reasons that people would tell you about changing to an EV. And Gary, I would tell you that a Prius is a gateway drug to a full EV as and when you feel like moving that way. But the reasons people drive EVs are, yes, they're cheaper to run. They're great for the environment, no emissions. You're keeping, you know, your money is buying electricity, which is clean and green electricity generated in New Zealand. We're not sending money offshore to the Arab states. And they are so fantastic to drive that, as you just said, Wallace, you stand at a set of traffic lights. And because it's, you know, an electric motor is either on or it's off, there's no grinding through the gears, then you can take anybody at a set of traffic lights and it really doesn't, it's not hard.
Yeah, I'm quite surprised at the pace of them from zero.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually yes. quite something, yes. isn't it, zero?
Yes.
I'm not an EV owner, but I do lease EVs, we'll hire them, rental cars, when I go down to Christchurch to see the whānau. They're great, except when I was trying to charge one at Lincoln University, that took forever. But I was really grateful that the chargers were on campus, which I thought was different to back in the day. So that's about all my experience with EVs.
Yes. And I think what chargers on a university campus, I would assume, would be slow.
Very slow.
AC chargers because it's expecting that you could be there for 3 or 4 hours. It's not like you're driving down State Highway 1 and you have to get to Taupo or, you know, and you need to charge quickly and you just want to stop for a cup of coffee and a pee. You know, that's the fast charging regime that you need down the central, you know, the main routes of the country. But that's basically a destination charger.
What I'm interested in is, and I've heard this actually recently in conversation, is around the batteries, the cost to repair batteries.
Replace them.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, replace them. Yes. And, it being very prohibitive or not. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe you can answer that.
Yes. Could I just ask you a question? Have you ever replaced the engine of any car you've owned?
No, I wouldn't like to.
I have.
It would be thousands.
Well, and the same is true for the traction battery of an electric car. They're very, very simple. Sometimes cells can get out of whack, and there are organisations, one of which is down in Christchurch, who can sometimes help rebalance those battery packs and get them back on the road again. If they are completely dead, then usually you would be getting a replacement one under warranty, because most new batteries these days have got 8 to 10 year warranties on them. So, that really isn't the problem. If, as we were discussing earlier, the Nissan Leaf battery loses the ability to hold as much charge because it has been cycled, you know, time and time and time again, then, like anybody with a car that suddenly doesn't fit their particular requirements, you trade it in and you get something that suits your driving style, but there'll be somebody who will buy your secondhand EV and be very happy with it. So the cost of batteries, I think, is a little bit of a...
red herring.
Red herring.
God.
Yes, it's the fossil fuels organisation sort of trying to deflate the balloon of EVs, because they don't want you to buy an EV. They want you to keep on buying an ICE car.
Well, on that,
the Toyota Prius battery lasts 150,000 to 200,000 miles.
Yes.
Kilometres, rather.
Yes, and I think at one stage, I think the first Prius battery replaced that anybody knows about, I think it was 14 years old. So, the longevity of these things is only going to get better. And I think to use that as a reason to not buy an EV is being very short-sighted.
Well, one thing that did come out, and let's report it on, was the fact, I guess, that whereas only 13% of those with petrol cars said they were interested in an EV, what happened when you did get an EV? Most people said they just wouldn't go back.
Correct.
That's right. It would be an over my dead body kind of relationship. Mm. That's right. Everybody I know who drives an EV, most people usually suggest that they wish they'd bought them earlier because they are just so much fun to drive. And as I say, they're great for the environment and they reduce your carbon footprint. Although, Gary, as I understand, if you're on an electric bus down in Christchurch, then obviously you'd reduce your carbon footprint to virtually nothing.
Yeah. Well, Maria in Auckland says, Wallace, I was lucky enough to be in a position to buy a brand new car. Opted for electric. The stars aligned, including the now gone 8K government subsidy, which made the numbers work. I couldn't be happier doing, on average, 400 kilometres for around $10.
And I think sometimes Wallace, when people give statistics like that, I think there's a vast intake of breath by a lot of ICE drivers who go, that can't possibly be right. There's something they're not telling us, and of course there is nothing we're not telling you, because that's the thing. Obviously now we've got IUCs which are now we have to buy, so there are.
Yeah,
which have to be supported. I mean, Correct. Everybody has known that since, you know, the day we all bought our EVs. We knew that we were getting a privilege to not have to pay them for the last 7 years. So,
good on you, Catherine.
You know, that's no problem.
Hey, nice to have you on. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks again, Wallace.
Leading the charge, chairperson Catherine Trounson. If you love your if you're happy with your Nissan Leaf, get in touch, 2101. It's quite extraordinary, really, because you are the happiest of us all, apparently. All right, to the panel poll. Where are they? All right, okay, so here we go. Should we legalise all drugs in New Zealand? As I said, an overwhelming response here on a snap panel poll. Unscientific, but nonetheless, it's a snapshot. Sarah Sparks, no. Gary Moore, no. 74.5% of you said yes.
Well,
25
we're swimming upstream, Sarah.
Yes, yeah, I'm used to that, Gary.
Isn't that extraordinary? I never would have thought it would be so lopsided. No. So 74% of listeners said yes to legalising all drugs in New Zealand, and 25.5% said no. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
I would now then question the number.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'm interested in data.
Yes, well, we can.
As you heard earlier.
My producer in my ear said, excuse me. Now, finally, it's that time of year again. The glitz and the glamour is back for the 2024 Eurovision Song Contest. The semi-finals kick off today in anticipation of finals this weekend, which is likely to be watched by, get this, 200 million people. For some, Eurovision is the global cultural event of the year. For others, it's a strange anomaly consisting of wild outfits, over-the-top performances. And here is a taste of last year's winner from Sweden. It's Loreen with Tattoo. Is it music? Is it not music? Your thoughts with us is Associate Professor Shelley Brunt from the Music Industry Degree at RMIT University Australia. Dr. Brunt, kia ora, good to have you here.
Kia ora, Wallace. Great to be here to talk about Eurovision.
200 million people plus. Why does Eurovision capture the attention of so many?
Great question. And I think if you were in Australia, it wouldn't even be a question. I know that when I lived in New Zealand, people didn't quite understand it.
Yeah.
But here in Australia, it's just an accepted part of culture.
Oh, really?
I think first of all, it's been around since 1956 and in the European Union. And Australia has had an entrant in Eurovision since, 2014, we had an interval act, Jessica Mauboy. And then since from 2015, we've had Guy Sebastian competing in it. So Australia is in the contest, and that's why we care so much about it. But in terms of why people might watch it, I think depending on who you ask, you're going to get a different response. I think that the people that I watch Eurovision with, we're interested in the kitsch, we're interested in the over-the-top glamour, the fireworks, the laser lights, the crazy costumes, the nonsensical lyrics. It's just the excitement of a live-to-air event.
All right, Sarah, you've heard Shelley, and it is OTT. I mean, it really is OTT. It's like the world of wearable arts music. Your take on it, Sarah?
Well, I remember when I was a kid learning about it, because didn't it launch ABBA? Didn't they sing Waterloo for the first time on Eurovision?
Shelley?
Yes, that's right. ABBA performed Waterloo in 1974, and that really was the start of their career. But we've had other superstars come from Eurovision too, like Celine Dion. She won in 1988.
Good grief.
And we had Olivia Newton-John performed for the UK. I don't know why. I think she was born in the UK. But that was in 1974, I think. So, yeah, so absolutely. It launches careers. So I think you're right there.
I did not know Olivia Newton-John, Celine Dion, ABBA. I did know Gary Moore.
I don't know anything about it at all.
No.
But I tend to get terribly excited about a jazz concert in New Orleans or something like that. So, but I often wonder when I watch some of these things. Call me cynical, but I wonder how much of it is music and how much of it is really a showbiz thing, you know? And
well, it's a good question, Shelley. Is it just a spectacle? Because I've often wondered that. Because sometimes I hear the songs and I'm like, you're kidding me? Really?
Yes, exactly.
Is that music, Shelley?
Yes.
I know. Well, look, you know, you're speaking to a music scholar here. So, so what I say goes, okay?
Hey, listen. One thing you said earlier on, Shelley, is you talked about Australian and culture in the same sentence, and
Shelley. Sorry about that.
Look, I'll take that with a kind ribbing because I'm a Kiwi citizen as well, so I'll take that too. But look, what I will say is that there's two things about Eurovision. One, it is a media spectacle that celebrates itself. So its purpose is really about the European Broadcasting Union, of which the SBS, which is the Australian station, is a member. It's really about the union of broadcasters celebrating how amazing they are and what spectacle they can sort of put on. But on the other flip side, it's sort of like a bit of a pretend performance to represent your country, right? So you have the national representative, but the songs that get put forward by, let's say, Sweden or Croatia or the Netherlands, etc., don't tend to be sort of folkloric or have, you know, some of them have the local language, but the aim is to win. And if you produce what we call sonically rootless music, so music that you can't really sort of place, if it's just sort of universal sounding, a power ballad, conventional pop chord progressions, then it could really come from anywhere. And it's that kind of song that will win the most votes and that will win.
How interesting.
Yeah, that's what I thought, because I looked at it too in terms of who was competing and came across the Ukrainian duo, and one's a rapper. So it was really interesting hearing another language in that context. And also Israel are in it this year, so which is great.
Well, there's quite a bit of response. Wallace, play the 94 winner of the Eurovision, a duet from Ireland. A sweet melody on guitar and piano is the best winning song of the whole tournament ever. Hey, Shelley, lovely to have you on RNZ again. Nice to chat. All right, that's us for today. And thank you for your rather extraordinary response this evening on the panel. And to Sarah Sparks and Gary Moore. Kia ora to you both.
Kia ora.
I'm Wallace Chapman. Stay with me. I'm here tonight.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.